Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
I kind of enjoyed beating Matt LaFleur twice a year.
That's hysterical. That's a good cut to play. Mully and Haw on the score. That's Ben Johnson. And that was one that you throw out for everybody, right? You let all the Bear fans know that you like beating Ben Johnson likes beating the flower.
And he's got history doing it.
And Dustin said that the meatball in him eats it up.
Well, I think so, because he's got more experience beating Matt LaFleur than the previous head coach did. And so really never happened with Matt Eberflus.
Never.
Thomas Brown beat Matt LaFleur once as an interim coach. And now you hope that Ben Johnson will get used to that, after having served as the offensive coordinator for the Lions, where they beat the Packers twice this year. I want Matt LaFleur, I want Ben Johnson to get used to beating Dan Campbell too, and then Kevin O'Connell. You want them to be the team that people fear playing because of Ben Johnson's offense, because of the way the Bears play defense, all the things. You want the Bears, let's face it, you want one day in the not-so-distant future to be sitting here on the Friday before Championship Sunday and to be breaking down a game the Bears are playing and how they're going to match up against their opponent. And you want them to be either the Commanders or the Eagles and have a game to look forward to. Enough of this offseason outweighing the regular season, because we've had enough of these offseason championship trophies, right?
Oh, no, it's got to happen on the field. And you know,
playoffs.
The good news is that he's used to putting game plans together against these teams. And you know, Kevin O'Connell just got a big contract. He's not going anywhere. He's going to be in Minnesota for a while. The flower, we know that he has planted himself there and is not leaving. And you there's a comfort in knowing that you got a coach that's just going to beat him a couple times a year out of habit. As far as the Detroit Lions are concerned, is there any element of you, anywhere in your heart, that you think their window for a Super Bowl may have closed this year? Because they got a lot of coaches.
I do think they're going to struggle.
I think they're
going to take a half step back. They have a lot of talent. Their roster is definitely loaded. Nobody's going to dispute that. Now, that's not exactly a revelation, but to assume that you can lose the football intellect that Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn offered Dan Campbell and not suffer as a result of that is naive.
The D-line coach and the O-line coach looks like he's out the door.
Your staff is being remade.
Yes.
And yes, the talent, it always comes down to talent.
Yes, it does.
But you have to find a way. As we know in Chicago, you can't sit here after watching what the Bears did in losing 10 games in a row for a team that we thought in August had playoff possibility. You can't sit here in Chicago and underestimate the value of coaching. So when you look at the Detroit Lions, it stands to reason they are going to struggle replacing these coordinators who made Dan Campbell seem smarter. Dan Campbell seemed more of a guy that was a better head coach because of them. And, yeah, he's going to miss them a lot. I really think so.
Yeah, it's going to be – I mean, that – you know, I know all we care about is how is the Bears staff going to look now you got the head coach. You need a defensive guy. It'd be great if they got a guy with kind of head coaching experience like we talked about with Dennis Allen. We don't know if that's going to happen. But I like the idea of the staff that potentially could put together – you don't give a guy – $13 million and then tell them, you know, I lie to your assistants, tell them they only have 2 years, tell them you're there for 5 years. You don't have to. I mean, it's just some of the things that's going back to Dave McGinnis.
Yeah, that's going way back. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, it's a different era when you're giving a guy this kind of money. I think that he's going to build a good staff.
These are all great references to the institutional knowledge and the Bears history. I really feel like, though, it's such
throw
a long time ago. Yeah.
Okay,
it feels like the fact that they were able to go out and get the most sought after head coach.
And they didn't have to fire Trent Baalke.
They didn't have to fire anybody.
Their version.
They didn't really get rid of their general manager. Actually, they leaned into the fact that they're going to be in lockstep. We don't know what that means contractually, but really, those are kind of details we'll get to later. Right now, you feel like it is the most relevant thing about all that has transpired this week is that the past is the past.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like there is a new day dawning at Halas Hall. Not to be overdramatic or even embellish it a lot, but when you do what they did and you're paying him what they are, that says that it's fair to look ahead and stop looking back.
It's a Joe Madden style move.
Yes, it is. That's a great comparison locally. It's a Craig Counsell style move. Now, Craig Counsell hasn't paid off in the way that Joe Madden did yet, but it is bold. You go out and you get the guy that everybody wants, and you pay top dollar for him. Yep. So this is a very aggressive move by a sleepy organization, or what was a sleepy organization at the end of the season.
And we're gonna talk to him, and we're gonna get into this stuff. But as I was saying to you earlier, just, you know, kind of reading different things and going through some of the storyline, the idea that his brother and he were both Cub fans, and they wanted to figure out, his brother got on the season ticket list as he was graduating high school. Like, you know how smart and how ambitious you have to be?
That's confidence.
To think that you're going one day get
to
a point, well, the minute I'll be working, you know, a top-level job, I'll have tons of dough and I'll be able to fly to Chicago or move to Chicago, I'll be able to follow the team I like on a regular, I'll get seasons. And that allowed Ben Johnson to go there. And there's like tons of photos of like him and his dad and his brother at a game.
In the bleachers.
Him and his wife, and I don't even know if they were married at that time.
In the bleachers.
At a game.
Man of the people.
And then there he is
going
with
to
his
Wrigley.
Whole family at a game. It's like
very relatable.
It's really relatable. Really
and
is.
It also shows a lot of foresight, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
So, and confidence. If the brother is in high school applying for season tickets that he knows he can't afford until he gets a big job.
And he's in Asheville, North Carolina,
yes.
But he knows he's going to be able to get to Chicago. I'm telling
you. The brother went to MIT.
Well, I mean, the brother is...
Is he the smart one?
I don't know.
What's he make?
We got to ask Ben.
What does he make?
if I'm graduating and I know I got to go to MIT. Like I'm saying, the family's got some wherewithal. They got some brain.
Here's the other thing that I think it suggests, and I don't know this to be true, which is why talking to him directly will be fun. When you have that kind of... photo history. When you have the kind of annual destination trips where you're going to Chicago, let's go to a Cub game.
Yeah.
This is a family tradition. At what point in those trips do you identify as a young man in your 20s or your early 30s as Chicago is a place you want to work, a place you want to raise your kids, a place you want to have your family? I just wonder if, yes, the Bears seized the opportunity. They hired Ben Johnson. They picked him. But did he pick them?
Yeah, it seems like
he picked Chicago.
He clearly did.
When he started out in coaching, was Chicago always the destination?
Well, that's a good question. And we talked to John Shoup before we talked to him. Shoup was one of the guys that encouraged him to get into coaching.
Shoup was the offensive coordinator
Shoup
here.
Shoup was here.
For 3 years.
Yes.
It's odd to say that this launched John Shoup's career, but it really did.
Yes, it did.
It ended poorly because of the way that 2003 season unfolded,
yes.
But it began spectacularly as the 2001 season went,
yeah.
Because he was the guy calling the plays, and that was a fun year.
It was.
And it gave him a cachet in the industry, a reputation that was respected, even though he was an easy guy to question in Chicago. For Bears fans, they still kind of remember that year. But in Ben Johnson's mind, if he was the mentor, he probably looked at his Bears experience as a very positive one from that vantage point.
Sure.
And so he may have always wanted to coach in Chicago. It'd be fascinating to see how he answers that.
Yeah. I mean, because he – think about it. He said, you know, this is where we wanted to be. He said that to the group the first time he met everybody working in the building as they cheered him after he signed his contract. And then, you know, we find out from George, hey, I really want this job, is how he starts
yes.
his interview. And then he ends it, did I tell you I really want this job?
And the way that you described, like, when you saw those photos, it all kind of does fit.
It does. It makes it feel like he wanted to be here and he was working to get here. And it was open, and this is where he wanted to go.
And
it feels like he picked the Bears.
Yes, and there's that easy confidence where he feels like he's where he belongs. And when he addressed his team, his players, and he addressed the media, and he's at Halas Hall for the first time, there was that feeling like, all right, he's where he wants to be, and certainly the Bears are pleased and thrilled that he's here.
I mean, think about the brother for a second. Okay, I can't get over this.
We got to interview the brother next.
Because I grew up in poor circumstance, and I never fantasized I'm going to get tickets, we're going to do this. Never thought about anything like that. Never imagined. But it seems like they have life plans at a younger age. It seems like he gets into football with an idea he's going to coach, and he's now moving from job to job, moving up, at doing really well at everything he's doing, and that's how you build up and get to this point. And now here he is in the place he may have had, like one of these life plans where you imagine yourself here. And that is an amazing thing to see happen.
It really is. And so he makes him relatable. It makes him likable.
Man, I was just like, wow.
Well, I'm surprised that you spent that much time looking at pictures of people in Cubs gear.
No, I certainly have gone to plenty of Cub games and certainly have enjoyed the atmosphere and all the rest of it. So, yes.
You understand it.
I grew up as a Sox fan, and I feel a sense of loyalty to my childhood schoolboy dreams. But I love the idea that somebody identified Chicago as a place.
No doubt about it. It's really going to be fun to talk to him.
Yeah.
Patrick Finley from the Sun-Times tweets out that more Bears assistants not expected to return with the new staff. We talked about John Hoke. He's listed here as not expected to return. Also running backs coach Chad Morton.
Mm. Yeah. I mean,
Chad Morton was a guy that got a big look at during Hard Knocks. We got inside his life a little bit. He was a motivational guy on the sidelines. Chad Morton and John Hoke not expected to be part of Ben Johnson's staff, according to Patrick Finley. That's a shame.
Yeah, it's too bad. But that is usually the way things work. In the NFL, you might keep one guy, you know, if they don't put Richard Hightower on that list until they get clearance from someone else, there's a possibility that he's back. You keep different people. Hank Fraley was on a different staff, and they kept him. Dan Campbell kept him when he took the job in Detroit. And I just think that that sort of thing happens, but you don't usually keep like seven guys off the staff.
You typically don't, no. Yeah, so, you typically don't. Starting over time.
And I only mention that because the Sox did.
Yeah, I know. You're kind of very concerned about that.
I'm not concerned number. At all.
Well,
you've
referenced it a couple of times. You don't like the fact that they kept retained seven people off the staff that lost 121 games. I think you should go to Sox Fest this weekend and voice that.
Again, you know, I've got the T-shirt that Shane gave me. I'd be thrown out of Sox Fest. I want to go, and I
want to go,
voice
but you don't
it.
Want to be thrown out. You don't want to make a scene.
It would be embarrassing.
I think it's really respectable. That you don't want to make a scene.
I told you I was at a Sox game once during the that horrible era with that horrible Adam Dunn, and I, you know, he was like striking out every time, and I'm sitting there and I hear some guy yelling, "Get it over with!" And I realize it's me. Like, what just happened?
Adam Dunn will not be at Sox Fest.
Get it over with.
A lot of members, a few
but
members.
I love Burley.
Mark Burley will be there.
All right. We got tons of people who want to check in. Let's get to Marty. Marty's in Lake Forest. Hey, Marty.
Hello.
What's up, Marty?
I just think you guys got to reel it back, because we had the same thing with Nagy. We had the same thing with all these other coaches. And I'm not going to be convinced until I really see it happening.
That's good.
You know, I don't care how much they paid or whatever. We had a guy that came from Andy Reid's, Nagy, came from Andy Reid's, and he failed us. Humanly. I mean, just terribly.
Not only that, but Andy said that he was the most ready coach he'd ever worked with. So, yeah, it's a good point. You know, nothing's happened yet. I think.
But here's the thing. Okay, I get it.
We had decided that we're putting the past behind us.
That's a thing.
It's a brave new
world.
And
again, where do you want us to be? During the process, which was, you know, scrutinized and criticized at times because of the length of the list, and you get accused of being too negative, and you get accused of being too critical, and okay, we get it. Maybe some of those allegations are – that was true, because you do get a little bit caught up in the cynicism sometimes. Fine.
Yes.
So now we walk into Hallis Hall the other day. We walk out feeling like we haven't felt before after an introductory press conference. We're very positive and upbeat about the development, and now we're getting carried away?
Yeah.
Where are we supposed to be?
Yeah, yeah.
Too negative, too positive? What? Tell me. I'm confused.
You know, I mean, and again, I'm not supposed to reference Bears history, but Dave McGinnis was like a really good coach, a great linebackers coach. When Dave Wannstedt came in, he kept Dave McGinnis. That was one of the first staffs that I worked, and Dave was a great guy to have there.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost hired him here later on. Never mind. Don't bring that up. Why do you keep mentioning it?
You can bring up whatever you want.
No, I'm not allowed to. We'll get to Frankie. Frankie's in Western Springs. Hey, buddy.
What's going on, guys? Let me vent for a second, because where else to vent sports frustration on the score, right? It's the best way. And it has nothing to do with Chicago. I'm still emotionally exhausted from the Bears and whatever. I can appreciate, wait, really quickly, I can appreciate what that last caller said, and also appreciate where you guys are coming from. Where else is there to be but upbeat with who they hired? That being said.
Yep.
So I'm from a generation where I cannot stand this generation, to where everyone playing today is the greatest to ever do something, right? Whether it's baseball, basketball, hockey, you name it, whatever. That's fine being said. I am very anti-Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City, Taylor Swift, Kelce, everything, okay? So let me put that out there right
Why?
Now.
Why? What's just, okay, wrong let me, with Taylor? Let me, come on, man.
Okay.
She's brilliant
First
lady.
Off, this is what I'm saying. It is what everyone has said across the country the past week. Number one, they barely beat Houston, okay? They barely beat Houston. Without those calls, number one, again, let's add it to the repertoire. Without those calls, they may not beat Houston. And without a doubt, a couple mistakes by Houston, okay? The flop thing. And these things bother me. It reminded me, just like Dave Portnoy and everyone else and their mother said, it reminded me of LeBron James. And in return, I want to throw up. Because, number one, until he does it, Mahomes is not better than Brady. He may be a better athlete physically. He is not better than Brady. LeBron is not better than Jordan. Anything, all wrapped up into those lines, it aggravates me as a man growing up in the greatest era of sports. Okay? Mahomes is not Brady. Plain and simple. Maybe one day he will, but right now, he isn't.
Thanks, Frankie. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah. Odd take. Coming after Patrick Mahomes, it just seems like an odd thing to do. I understand the flopping and the penalties, but, you know, Patrick Mahomes, to me, is as likable of a professional athlete as there is in any sport. Going anti-Chiefs is really a take, but it seems very impulsive, and it's the hottest of hot takes.
I've got a close friend who unfortunately had this blind spot for Mahomes, and he's bet against him for his whole career, basically. And now he's on the Bills because he feels like eventually he's going to lose and he's going to get paid for the guy losing for being against him. You get in these terrible positions in life. Patrick Mahomes has done nothing but win. He's a great player. All right, we got to get to a break. 312-644-6767 is Molly and Awe on the Score.
Chiefs Kingdom, Arrowhead Pride. Let's go, baby, competition terrified.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're ripping this thing down to the studs, and we're going to build it up.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. And it's interesting to hear that because we've got a texter checking in saying the difference from Nagy to Johnson is Nagy was a guy who was just a play caller. Johnson is a guy who's going to build an offense. And that's what's fascinating, the way he said that, the way he's got the quarterback. And, nice to have a quarterback, but he's going to go down to the studs and build it up. And it's not going to look like what he did in Detroit. It's going to look different because there's different talent here.
There will be carryovers. There will be emphasis on the running game, pass protection schemes, the play-action passing game. So it'll look familiar. It'll be executed differently. And I think what he's trying to remind people is that this is it's a rebuild of the offensive approach. It's not a rebuild of the offensive roster. And there's a difference. Now, the offensive line needs revamped. And we can find out many different verbs or descriptions of the way that they're going to approach it. You're going to have a different offensive line, but you're going to have the same approach with your skill position, same guys, essentially. Roma Dunze and DJ Moore are a pretty good tandem. Keenan Allen may want to come back, but it's got to be at the Bears' price if he does.
Yeah.
You have a quarterback, and then the backfield I think is interesting because he's coming from a place that had Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, and he got the best out of both guys.
What was their nickname? Knuckles and Slappy?
Sonic.
Sonic.
And okay. Sonic, yeah. Sonic.
Knuckles.
Yeah.
What?
But when you look at what to be excited about, there's a lot to be excited about. Some people on text line telling us to settle down, but look.
Oh, I'm pumped up. I appreciate
you look at Detroit and the Lions' offense, Ben Johnson's offense, got the most out of Jameson Williams, who had an unbelievably tough start to his career. Right, the guy who got suspended for gambling or anyway, Jameson Williams was a threat in Ben Johnson's offense. Amon-Ra St. Brown became one of the most productive wide receivers in football in this offense. Both running backs found ways to really utilize their different style of running, but both those guys were good. And Jared Goff enjoyed a career renaissance thanks to Ben Johnson. So a lot of that starts with the offensive line, but when you have a play caller, an offensive coordinator, a guru, if you will, who gets the most out of these individuals, it's exciting to think what that means for DJ Moore, maybe DeAndre Swift, certainly Caleb Williams and Cole Kmet.
I wouldn't argue any of those points. It should be very interesting to see how that works out. He also is going to have a say in personnel. We heard that, right? He's going to be someone that can talk through these things with the general manager. I would recommend just trade the third round pick and move up for something in the second round, or it just let somebody else pick.
That's not the way you do it.
You just say, hey, the third round is turned out to be my boogeyman.
So you think they should do something different?
Well, think about the three third round picks.
Bayless Jones.
You got Bayless Jones, who is gone.
Panthers.
That was a very bad
choice. That was a bad one.
Okay.
You saw that one from the beginning.
You got Zach Pickens, who is, I mean, honestly, I can't think of anything he's done. I don't mean that as a attack on the play.
Oh, it doesn't sound like one at all.
No. But he's been basically unavailable for many games, or, you know, a healthy scratch for others.
It's a miss.
It's a miss
it's
right
closer
now.
Closer to a miss than a hit. Okay.
And the third one is Kieran Amagaji. That's his third round pick. That's 3 years running where the third round has stymied the guy.
And that's a round, and that's a spot in the draft where you'd like to find a starter.
And listen, you'd love to have Kieran Amagaji develop into a starter, and you'd love to have somebody come in here that can toughen him up and figure out what he's doing wrong and help him, because he seems like a guy with a lot of the qualities you'd want in an offensive tackle.
Well,
in
fairness, and I want to remind you.
Not able to do it because he doesn't know how to.
Remind us that he also, when you draft him pre-injured from an Ivy League school, you are identifying him as a project, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Year one of the project, maybe our expectations were out of whack. When he was thrown into the game, he wasn't ready.
No.
Maybe he, in year two, will take that step. I think he's got a new offense, maybe a new lease on football life, and that's the way he will approach it. He's a depth piece right now, difficult to project into the offensive line. And to your point, Ben Johnson's arrival, we don't know what he values, what traits he looks for in offensive linemen. Does Kieran Amagaji have those traits?
He has traits.
He does.
But does he have the ability to play in the NFL?
Don't know.
And that's
don't
why, know you know, the problem with a pick like that is the guy can dominate at a level where he's bigger and stronger than people. And then you get into the league and you realize, I'm not as big and strong as most of these guys. It's a problem.
So
you've got to work on your base. You've got to work on basic elemental type of things that you learn. They need a big time offensive line. I think Hank Fraley could take him and make him into.
You
a
really got to think for Hank Fraley.
I mean, there are more. I want him there.
He's a really good offensive line coach,
gotcha.
But there are a lot of good offensive line coaches,
and you need one. That's what I'm saying.
You do need one.
You need one.
You need a guy like that. But at one point in time, that guy that we were describing, Chris Morgan, came here with a good reputation.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, he was valued enough to where the Bears held on to him last year. That was a Ryan Poles decision. But I think the point is well taken. The third round has been the boogeyman spot in the draft for Ryan Poles. Now he's got some help, and I think it's a great idea that you suggested that maybe they should auction off that pick to maybe a season ticket holder, somebody like that. Is that what you would think would be a good idea? Maybe us. Maybe we could do that. Somebody else, anyone but Poles, pick the third rounder.
Why is that a boogeyman? Does he reach? What is it? Does he look for traits over success, over playing ability? I mean, that's weird.
Well, in each of those cases, you got guys who were more higher ceilings than floors.
Yes.
And that probably is a miscalculation.
Yeah.
You would want a guy who might be ready to plug and play, because third rounders can start for you.
Start.
And what Ryan Poles miscalculated was that they weren't going to help them win now, and now by the time they're ready to maybe contribute, it's too late. It's too late.
Yeah, it's tough. It's kind of just his blind spot. It's just one of these things where he can't seem to get the right player at that point in the draft, where a lot of teams find really talented players that can impact. There's still a limited number of players who have been taken. You got to do better in the third round.
Let's go back to the original text and the way we got into this topic before we break. Ben Johnson, play caller, offensive game plan builder, a play collector. So he will have the creative plays. They get a lot of attention because they are innovative, and boy, they make us chuckle. But the beauty of his offense is that it's kind of rooted in the fundamental things that we value if you have certain football sensibilities. Running the ball,
yes.
Protecting the quarterback,
yes.
And using the play-action pass the play-action passing game to set up the downfield threat.
That's a great thing to have. All right, we're going to take a quick time out. We got Chris Getz. We're going to be able to talk to the man with the plan on the south side. The Sox Fest is going on this weekend. Should be great. Really looking forward to Sox Fest and to learning what's out there. We're going to ask Chris Getz some questions. Just, hey, who do you think is going to be the opening day starter, and how will you handle him when the year is over? They're hanging on to guys now, right? Young guys coming. Chris Getz next on The Score.
White Sox, go, go, White Sox, let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. What a pleasure to welcome in Chris Getz, the White Sox general manager. He joins us on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Atura, your all-weather tire, Atura.com. Chris, good morning. Welcome to the show, and congratulations on Sox Fest. Should be a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Yeah, definitely a nice part of the year here. Kickstart the year just before spring training with Sox Fest.
Yeah, I've been to so many of these Sox conventions over the years that I've watched you in them. I've seen your presentation at different points.
So what's the message,
Chris? It's always fun to, last night we had an event with our sponsors downtown, and my favorite part was just having the players together. You only get so many opportunities in off seasons. And we got a lot of new faces mixing in with some guys that have been here. So, there's certainly a lot of symbolism, to be recognized with the group that we have in here.
When you see the season ticket holders at the event, when you project what your message is going to be for 2025, how do you describe where expectations are for a season that I think Sox fans think is going to be another struggle? But at least you have a direction and a plan.
Yeah, I mean, the message has been the same from the beginning. We're committed to building from the ground up. The so many foundational areas of the organization has taken up a lot of our time and our resources. For the long term. In the short term, there's some pain that you need to endure, and we certainly went through that last season. You look at our farm system, the increase in talent that we've put together in the last year, infrastructure-wise. You look at, what we've done on the pitching side with a Brian Bannister leading the ship there. We brought in a Ryan Fuller to oversee the hitting and essentially a Banny equivalent. You have discussions with some of our player development staff and players and you know, you're talking to free agents, and you know, although the record was not pretty last year, I don't think there are plenty of people, both players and staff, that want to be part of the White Sox. So I think it's exciting for our fans to hear that.
You know, I know this is premature to ask, but what the heck? Who's going to be the opening day starter? Any idea? Would you go with Jonathan Cannon? Is that an obvious choice? Am I reaching here before you find out what people can do?
Yeah, I think it's a little premature to name an opening day starter. You know, the roster is still shaping. Mm-hmm. These guys are still developing. We've seen the capabilities of a Jonathan Cannon, a Sean Burke. You know, Martin Perez, who's been pitching for a long time. So we've got some options. I can't say that we've got, you know, a real standout. This is an automatic. He's going to be the opening day roster. I think, you know, this time last year, who's going to be our opening day starter? You know, it wasn't easy to give a confident answer. And then there was Garrett Crochet about a week before, in which I'm sure many thought was a little nuts. And then he kickstarted an unbelievable season. So, still taking form, which is not surprising considering, you know, where we're at as an organization.
Chris, where are you as an organization with Luis Robert Jr.? How have the conversations gone? How often do you hear from other teams wondering if you're willing to trade him?
Well, for one, you know, although it was a season, unfortunately, that, you know, he missed a lot of time. I mean, he looked really good in spring training. You know, even in that short window at the beginning of last year, he was having really good at-bats. It was hitting for power. You were seeing the old Luis Robert. Then he has that, you know, that leg injury that just obviously took him out of the season. He came back and he was just out of sorts, lost his rhythm. He just wasn't himself. So he finished healthy and he's had a good off season training down, you know, in Florida. So, you know, for him, gosh, we got to find a way to keep him on the field. If that means we need to be very intentional with, you know, using the DH, in which we really haven't been able to do in years past because Eloy, you know, was in that spot on a regular basis. Move him to the corners on occasion. You know, just be very watchful and mindful of his workload, because if we can keep him on the field, even if he's not, you know, in center field every single day and night, you know, the production's going to be there. And everyone around the league recognizes that. They do, and that's why they have interest. Unfortunately, you know, when it comes to conversations, you know, they want to get a fraction of, you know, they're only going to pay a fraction of his full value. You got a guy that was a 5-win player in 2023. And last year it was, you know, he just got chunks of him because of the injury. So we believe in the talent. We got to keep him on the field because he can be a special player.
I'm really fascinated by the way that you've brought in the pitching guy and the, you know, everyone's talking about Bannister. And you know, I think all of us are looking at the young pitching that is on the way. You know, all the lists come out and they're named the two best left-handed pitchers coming into this season by MLB last evening when I saw it. Do you really... I mean, how long does it take for guys to get here? I feel like if I had a fast forward button, I'd be watching some really good Sox teams. Is that the way this is going?
Yeah, I think that's right. And you bring up a really cool, exciting example with the, you know, we've got two of the top, you know, left-handed starters in baseball, minor league baseball. And you know, I from what I've gathered, I think in the 15-year existence of at least MLB Pipeline putting those out, I don't think that's we've seen that. So it's a unique situation. You know, Noah had, you know, 60 or so innings at Double A. You know, we're talking about you know, a kid, a cold climate high school signee. He didn't have a lot of innings under his belt, so, you know, early on you got to get him through, you know, full seasons appropriately as he fills out his frame. But man, he's got a chance to be really special. But you know, we're not too far off just because we've got, you know, close to 90 innings or at the 90 inning threshold. So we're starting to tap into, you know, what a, you know, being able to make major league starts. He's got stuff. He throws strikes. You know, he's savvy on the mound. So, I don't think, you know, I don't say he's knocking on the door, but he's not that far off. And then Hagen Smith, You know, fifth pick in the draft last year, arguably the top pitcher we believed he was, and I know a lot of organizations did. You know, you look at, you know, what Paul Skeens did, and I don't want to put him in that category necessarily because, you know, what Skeens was able to accomplish last year. But, you know, some of these top college arms pitching in the SEC, you know, they can move quickly as well. So I don't think we're that far off of watching a Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith at the front of a rotation for the White Sox, because I think it's in the very near future.
That's exciting stuff. Yeah. So, Chris, when you look at the way you've structured your front office, it's been very interesting. Brian Bannister has a ton of respect coming from another organization. Ryan Fuller, director of hitting from the Orioles, also well-respected throughout the game. I think it's curious in terms of the player development. Those guys are not in your major league dugout. Those guys are overseeing the entire operation from every level because that's your approach to player development. That's also intentional. Why is that decision made that those guys, as important as they are, will take the role and do the job in that way?
Well, for so many years in our game, you know, and it applied here, but, you know, throughout Major League Baseball where – all right, the major league hitting coach would set the philosophy for the entirety of the organization from an acquisition standpoint, from a development standpoint. Gosh, I mean, we're talking about having to manage, you know, a lot when, you know, we know how difficult it is to hit at the major league level and how much time and focus and emotion that takes. So to have someone in a Banny position or, you know, Ryan Fuller on the hitting front, obviously, to have someone that is a step removed, there for support with our major league coach and our players, can understand and see trends before they're happening, and it's just another lens, but really another hand for the major league coach and our minor league coaches. So, you know, it's someone that's just paying attention to what's going on in the game from a macro level, while our coaches can just show up each day and execute a plan for those particular players. So, you know, we talk about it now, it just sounds so obvious. Like, gosh, how are we not doing this for years in the game? And you know, last year was the first year we did it on the pitching front, and, you know, we reaped the rewards for it. And I would imagine that the same thing's going to happen on the hitting front. But most importantly, we're just building this foundation, and we know it's going to pay off.
Chris, my wife's from Grosse Pointe, and she's one of the most well-mannered people I've ever met. How are you, a Grosse Pointe native, going to be able to handle the kind of sparring that Kenny Williams used to do at these Sox conventions? Are you looking forward to your meeting of angry fans? Is that what is going to happen?
Well, I you know, hopefully there's not too much anger. I realize that there's going to be some, you know, for me, I'm very comfortable talking about our what's going on with the White Sox, where we're at, where we're going, what we've accomplished in a year. You look at bringing in a Will Venable, right, or even a Fuller, or some other individuals, and even some players. They, you know, a year ago, I don't think we get some of these people, this type of talent, because they were just ideas, and now we've got more things that are, or I should say, tangible. So it's starting to happen. You know, I've got, you know, too many positive things to point to. Now, I certainly understand that we're all in this to win at the major league level, and that's what our fans want. But to make that happen, I've got to go about it the right way. We have to, and stay committed to that. Or because you start making short-sighted decisions, and that's even more frustrating in the end.
Enjoy the weekend, Chris. It's going to be a lot of fun at the Romova Theater. It's a cool concept. It's going to be an intimate setting, and I hope that you get the most out of it. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks a ton, Chris.
Very good, guys. Thanks for having me.
That is Chris Getz, the general manager of the White Sox. Do you remember those times with Kenny be like
combative
at people?
Yeah,
oh my God.
But that kind
and
of
that's his personality.
That's his, guy, that's
exactly.
His personality.
And
Kenny Williams will challenge you.
Yes.
And I think that was why he was an excellent executive.
Yeah, very interesting.
Chris Getz is a little bit more affable.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to say, just a different personality.
Different guy.
He's not going to challenge
Will
you
Venable,
as much as.
First time he'll really meet Sox fans. Fun. All right. We got to get to a break. It's Mully and Haw. We've got the man himself, Ben Johnson, joins us next on The Score.